I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. What does it mean to be a man today? One model who is commonly evoked is Ernest Hemingway. In many ways, he personified masculinity. Not only was he extraordinarily successful professionally, he won the Nobel Prize in Literature, but he'd been to war. He was a big game hunter, a womanizer, and a regular drinker at Sloppy Joe's in Key West. Author Marty Beckerman tackles this question by journeying through Hemingway. He's the author of the new book, The Hemingway. That's three words. The book is a tongue-in-cheek guide to how to be a man like Ernest Hemingway. We'll travel deeper into the role of Hemingway in shaping views of modern men by talking also with two literature experts at Rollins College. How to be a man like Ernest Hemingway, this week on Intersection. And so to look at that idea of what does it mean to be a man through the example of Ernest Hemingway, we talk with Marty Beckerman. He's the author of the new book, The Hemingway. Marty is joining us from New York City. Good to have you with us.
Hey, thanks so much.
Great to have you. I'm also joined in studio by two experts on Hemingway from Rollins College. One is Assistant Professor Paul Reich, who is teaching a class this fall on Hemingway.
Thanks, Mark.
Great to have you with us. And also Associate Professor Jill Jones, who teaches a class on coming of age in literature and popular culture at Rollins. Jill, great to have you.
Hi, thanks. Nice to be here.
Well, Marty, I want to start with you first. Your book is tongue-in-cheek, a very tongue-in-cheek guide of how to be a man like Ernest Hemingway. It includes chapters on hunting, the importance of things like eating meat, drinking beer, serving in war. Why do you think that this guide is needed for 20-something men like yourself today?
Well, I think guys today, and I definitely include myself in this, we can use Twitter and Facebook and Google and Wikipedia, but we don't actually know how to do anything that doesn't involve technology. If you dropped us in the middle of the woods, we would all be dead within half an hour because we have no actual survival skills. The only thing we know how to do is use our computers.
Well, how come you don't have any of those skills?
Well, you can almost blame our parents' generation, our father's generation, for not passing this down, but I know my dad tried to pass a lot of it down, and I was too busy playing Game Boy to pay attention. So I think it was just the environment we were raised in. You know, we don't need them necessarily, but hey, once the electrical grid goes down and, you know, that movie The Road comes to life, we're going to need to know some of this stuff.
So obviously you see the need for those skills, but why did Hemingway rise to the top of your list as the ideal man to have as a role model?
Oh, he's a total archetype of that classical masculinity of challenging death just for the fun of it, of living life to the fullest. I think that we don't really live life to the fullest now. We're so scared of dying. We're so scared of danger that we sort of live in this digital cocoon where we never have any real fun. We never really experience anything that's not on YouTube.
Well, Hemingway, of course, the man lived large. He also had a huge impact on literature, a huge writer of the 20th century. What way do you think that literary legacy plays in viewing Hemingway compared with the lifestyle of the man that you're idealizing?
You know, it's funny because I think a lot of people my age, they don't know necessarily the For Whom the Bell Tolls or The Old Man and the Sea or A Farewell to Arms. I don't think many people my age have read all those books, but everybody knows the Hemingway cartoon character. Everybody knows the legend, the Hemingway legend, the hard-drinking, hard-living, animal-slaughtering, war-glorifying beast of a man. Everybody's sort of familiar with that over-the-top persona that he created for himself. In many ways, Ernest Hemingway was the best fictional creation of Ernest Hemingway, as a literary professor once put it.
Well, we said at the top of the show, your book, The Hemingway, is a tongue-in-cheek guide to the lifestyle of Ernest Hemingway. But, you know, he was a winner of the Nobel Prize. And also, with his literary legacy, you chose to portray it in the style of Family Guy or of South Park. Why did you write it like that and not in a more prosaic style?
Oh, I definitely think that sense of humor is needed to get to people my age. To make them pay attention. My actual hope is that because I'm such a fan of Hemingway, even though I'm making jokes at his expense and his persona's expense, my hope is that people will read the book And even if they haven't read Hemingway before, the book will inspire them to go back to the novels.
Well, Paul Reich of Rollins College, how does Marty's tongue-in-cheek characterization of Hemingway compare with the real thing? How much of that image was real? How much of it was myth?
I think a lot of it was manufactured. And certainly, you know, Hemingway worked hard to create that masculine image that Marty talks about and certainly that we see as the sort of Hemingway myth today. But I think, too, if you look at his literature, you'll see something, a type of man that's probably a better man than the sort of Hemingway Hemingway caricature that we see. Someone that's capable of sensitivity, someone that doesn't always drink himself under the table, someone that isn't always a womanizer, someone that's able to be hurt by women.
There is some sensitivity in that.
Absolutely.
So, but was it easier at that time to personify, to project that image of masculinity in the way that Hemingway did as compared to the modern day?
Yeah, I think it was easier because there were certainly opportunities for him to do that. And I think for him, he was very invested in sort of creating this hyper-masculine image. And we could talk about why he wanted to do that. You know, as Marty talks about in his book, and it's pretty well known, his mother used to dress him up in dresses and have long hair. And, he worked to sort of combat those sort of early childhood traumas of being dressed like a girl.
Well, Marty, how do you rectify with that? You know, knowing this is a man who might have had some psychological damage. In fact, he did end up killing himself. Knowing that, it is a psychological legacy of Ernest Hemingway as well. How does that fall in with the idea of using him as a role model?
Right. Well, he was obviously overcompensating his entire life, but what amazing overcompensation, right? I mean, we are so tied up in technology now that the idea of going to Africa or going on amazing adventures around the world, I don't know if that really occurs to most of us. I'm really impressed by Mark Zuckerberg, actually, who is the icon of social networking technology
Facebook.
For our generation, mm-hmm. because he's now actually killing his own animals for food because his attitude, which I completely sympathize with and I wish I could emulate, his attitude is it's wrong to eat meat if you're not willing to do it yourself. It's wrong to essentially pay somebody to do something you don't want to do. And we want to think of meat as something that comes from the grocery store, something just comes wrapped in plastic and is served on a plate at a restaurant, when what Zuckerberg is doing and what Hemingway did was really experiencing the whole thing. And so I think that's just really one minor metaphor for the way that we distance ourselves from real life now. And Hemingway was all about embracing the physical world.
Well, Jill Jones, you're teaching a class about coming of age in literature and in popular culture. How does this definition of masculinity that we see personified in Hemingway in the early part of the 20th century, how does that compare with the way it's been portrayed in previous generations, particularly literature?
Well, I actually find myself thinking right now about Man versus Wild.
The show on the Discovery Channel, Bear Grylls, he goes out in these sort of semi-staged scenarios and does these extreme activities.
Right, and there are extreme sports. I think there's a lot of sort of uber masculinity at the moment.
Why?
I think we are always interested in that. I think it's an extreme, and especially now you also have Clinton on What Not to Wear, right? You have sort of a number of different masculinities, I think. I taught a course on coming of age in the 19th century novel some years ago, and I thought I'd be comparing men and women and boys and girls and that it would be very different. So Little Women, right? They all have to stay in the house. And Joe literally says at one point, "I'd love to run away and raft down the river with you, Laurie, but I'm a girl and I must stop at home." But in fact, I think we love Huck because he's a little, I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying this, a little girly, right? Not typically masculine. He cries when Buck dies and you're very moved. He feels sorry for people. And so I think of that as sort of and Hemingway himself called it the great American novel, right? So it's this great American male novel, and it's always touted as a boy novel, but he's very unusual.
Is it very American, the image of Hemingway that we have in our heads? You know, you go down to Key West and there's the Papa Hemingway contest. Is that a particularly American thing, or are there Jean Valjean lookalike contests in France or something along those lines?
That's a great question. Well, it's so much fun to parody Hemingway. So you get these writing contests where his style is just, it was very unique. And oddly enough, I think really, Paul would probably agree with me, really influenced by Gertrude Stein. So put that in your manly pipe and smoke it.
Do you think, is it a characterization that image was created because of the times, because of coming out of the roaring 20s, going, you know, having survived through the Great War and heading up to World War II? Was Hemingway the only one kind of living in that moment who personified it, Paul?
No, he certainly attracted other men around him. He's very good. As good as he was attracting women, he was very good at attracting other men to sort of participate with him in these activities that he did. But I guess I would have a little bit of a problem with this idea of him as the sort of great white hunter, you know, on safari in Africa. He wasn't the great white hunter. He was the tourist going on safari with a great white hunter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these ideas about Hemingway and his masculinity are certainly created ideas. There were things that he did. I mean, when he went fishing, he took other people fishing with him, guides to help him fish. You know, so he wasn't always the most masculine man on the boat or on the safari or out in the hunt. And so
he was surrounded by those individuals.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he participated, but, you know, he wasn't always the uber male.
And wouldn't you agree that his best stories, I think, his really good work, is about failed masculinity.
Yes.
The bullfighter who couldn't really bullfight that well, but kept trying.
Well, Marty, what do you say to that?
Barnes is the ultimate
icon
of failed masculinity in The Sun Also Rises. The guy is impotent. And there's a lot of questions over, well, why did Hemingway go through four wives? He was difficult to live with, but and why were his wives all kind of, they had short hair, and he was very into, I'm not sure that transgenderism is the right word, but he was very into this idea of the male becoming the woman becoming the male. He got into this in his erotic novel, The Garden of Eden. He had some pretty progressive ideas on gender for his time, and I think that guys today are actually, It's interesting because take the Dos Equis Most Interesting Man in the World.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that, it's a masculine guy, almost a Hemingway-esque guy.
With the beard and everything.
He's got the beard. Right, exactly. Go ahead, Marty.
It's a complete ripoff. It's a guy in a beard who travels around the world and knows all the secret knowledge. And it's a hugely successful ad campaign. I think it raised Dos Equis sales by 22%, something like that, because young guys completely relate to it. They completely get the irony of classical masculinity being both a joke and a lot wrong with it, but also there was something there that we've lost. It's almost like we threw the baby out with the bathwater because, you know, it's good that there's not as much domestic violence as there used to be, of course. I think it's good that most guys today wouldn't be quite as eager to go off and believe war propaganda and go off to another country and fight a useless war. But at the same time, we've kind of lost a bravery, a bravado, our cojones.
Well, Jill Jones, let me ask Jill Jones to respond to some of this. Jill, what do you think about what Marty's saying? Hemingway is progressive in viewing gender roles or what?
You know, I think he is a reflection of the times to some extent. I keep thinking of
his times.
I keep thinking of F. Scott Fitzgerald, Bernice Bobs Her Hair, this idea of cutting off your hair and being sassy. But I don't know if Paul's read this. I hate to jump off a bit, but we have a really interesting short story by his sister, Carol Hemingway, in our archives at Rollins. She went to Rollins and published it in the newspaper. And the gender bending and the sexuality in that short story is really pretty surprising, considering it was the 1930s. So I think we think that's very cutting edge, but I think there was quite a bit of gender bending in that period, more than perhaps in the 50s. So
you're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with Marty Beckerman by phone. He's author of the new book, The Hemingway. He joins us from New York City. I'm also joined in studio by Rollins College Assistant Professor Paul Reich, who teaches a class this coming fall on Hemingway. Also, Rollins College Associate Professor Jill Jones, who teaches a class on coming of age in literature and popular culture. I'm Mark Simpson. We're talking about Ernest Hemingway and the idea of masculinity today. Why does there seem to be this trend of going back to some sort of uber masculine behavior? Tell us about it. What do you think on Facebook or Twitter? You can also send an email to intersection@wmfe.org. You know, it's interesting. If you think back just a few years ago, there were programs like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy,
yes,
on Bravo, and many other similar shows in that vein that spawned off. Why do you think that this idea of what's been called the metrosexual male, this guy who is into primping and prepping and getting the finer things in life, why do you think it went to that far extreme? Is this a trend that we see kind of in a cyclic kind of pattern coming around and around again? Do you see something similar and this kind of reaction to go back to basics? What do you think, Paul Reich?
I don't know. I think it is cyclical to some degree, but certainly, you know, it's a lot harder to primp yourself and pay for the manicures and the pedicures if the economy is not doing well. So, you know, we might see part of the reason we might be sort of going away from that model is that we simply don't have the funds to go to the salon anymore. And, you know,
you can't afford it. Right. This has been called the man session, I should say.
Yeah. So that could be part of it, too. I don't know. I sort of struggle. There are still really masculine men out there. I mean, if you look at sports, for example, right? I mean, those Ben Roethlisberger, you know, is, I think, the prototypical masculine man. Now, he's
football
certainly
player.
Got in trouble for things that he's done. You look at something like George Clooney, for example, actor. He lives abroad for a good portion of the time, like Hemingway did.
Seen as a real sophisticate in many circles.
Right. But he has these very close-knit group of friends that are men that, you know, they sort of go on motorcycle trips together. And so he's sort of – and he does well with the ladies. So he's, you know, he's sort of like this Hemingway ideal to some degree. But, yes, sophisticated. And I don't think we should forget the fact that Hemingway himself was very sophisticated. I mean, he, you know – even though he sort of had this this very broad masculine image, he was someone who could read and talk with the best of them.
So, Jill Jones, why do you think we had this kind of stretch out to the farthest extremes of what maybe a metrosexual man is? And why do you think we're having this sort of resurgence of the masculine male archetype?
Well, you know, I think there are more possibilities now. I think we're always attracted to this what Marty talks about, going back and being able to do everything ourselves. So you get this sort of rugged individualism. And there was even, remember the women's commercial, I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan? Well, how do you one up that? Well, you shoot the pig and then bring home the bacon and fry it up in a pan. So I think it is, I think it is related to this idea of independence. But even in the I was thinking about cooking shows. The Hell's Kitchen Chef.
Of course, you're talking in Hell's Kitchen about Chef Gordon Ramsay, who is known for his tirades. He doesn't hold back when he is dissatisfied with the performance of one of the chefs.
Very manly. Just, you know, the testosterone is just coming off him in waves, if you will. But it's a cooking show. So I think things are getting mixed up in an interesting way.
Is there a push for women to kind of go toe-to-toe with the men then? Is that what you're saying in some cases?
You know, masculinity is a little clearer to me. I'm not sure women have had, in terms of gender roles, in terms of what women are allowed to do, things have broadened. In terms of how women act, I'm not sure as much. I mean, Rachel Maddow to me is a really interesting new person on the news. And I keep saying to my husband, I think it's hard for you to understand how interesting it is for women to see Rachel Maddow, who can really go toe-to-toe, who can kind of sit back and talk about politics without seeming different, without having to defer. She's a very different model than we've seen before. But usually they have long blonde hair and they've got the eyeliner and they look like real women, but they can talk politics with the men. So I'm not sure we've come quite as far in some ways.
Well, Marty, you know, yourself being a younger man, why do you feel that maybe the Hemingway ideal appeals more to you than the metrosexual one that we saw just a few years ago? Or is it possible to combine both of them for today's younger generation of men?
Right. I do think the economy is a big part of it, because the metrosexual thing was kind of a luxury. But at the same time, it's not just the economy. I think guys my age kind of look at that, and it's not something I would want to do. Even if I could afford a pedicure, I don't want to go get a pedicure, right? Even if I could afford to get my chest waxed, I wouldn't want to do it. Actually, for the Huffington Post, I did get my chest waxed on video. It was everything. It was my entire the entire front side of my body, and it was really just the worst experience. Anyway, moving on. I don't recommend being manscaped. This idea of, like, men shouldn't have hair and we should be, you know, as smooth as a baby's bottom. I don't think that's something that guys right now want, even if we could afford it. So moving beyond that, not just the way we look, but also the things we can do, I'm mad at myself. I'm angry at myself, and I know a lot of guys my age are angry at themselves, that I can't build anything. I don't know how to build furniture. I don't know how to fix a car. These were skills that even just a few decades ago were just assumed that every guy would have them. It was just assumed that every young man would be able to do this stuff. And those skills, carpentry and automobile maintenance, is largely disappeared.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting you say that. You know, a few years ago, there was a book that came out, The Dangerous Book for
Yes.
Boys,
Yep.
and it seemed like a back to basics kind of skill set. In some ways, reminded me a little bit of the manuals you used to get in the Boy Scouts that would say, "Here are these projects you can do with your troop," or something like that. Jill.
Well, I would again argue there's not as much for girls.
But there was a book, though, that
came out afterwards.
Right, a sequel for girls, yeah.
Yes, but it wasn't dangerous, I don't think. I think they took that out of the title.
It was exciting or something. I can't quite recall off the top of my head.
I just wanted to make sure that Marty understood that Paul is wearing product.
In his hair. But on the radio, we don't really know that. Well, you know, it's so interesting. Marty, I wanted to ask you, if you have your book with you, I wonder if you might read us one of the passages from it, just to give our listeners a sense of what you've idealized here in the Hemingway.
You know, I actually don't have the book right in front of me, I hate to say. But my favorite line is, "A meal without meat is like sex without an orgasm. No wonder so many women are vegetarians."
Well, Marty, you know, you've written this book, The Hemingway. You know, what is something that you've put in there that you think really typifies what the Hemingway is?
I think that the important thing, even though Hemingway killed himself and he had a very tragic last decade of his life because his body had been shredded to pieces by decades after decades of alcoholism, he lived before he died. He really lived life to the fullest, and I don't think we do that quite as much today. He lived life on his own terms. He did not compromise on anything, which, you know, maybe is admirable and maybe not, but he became a legend. He made himself a legend because he lived in a legendary way. And sitting in front of Twitter and sitting in front of Wikipedia isn't the same. Everything we know now comes from Wikipedia, but everything Hemingway knew came from adventure and experience, and I think that's great.
Paul Reich, I think that's an interesting point that Marty makes, the reference to Wikipedia. You know, I came of age in a time before Wikipedia, and it's not something that I think of as a first go-to reference, although I will say I do use it. It's helpful.
Sure.
It's out there, but it's not the first thing I think of. What do you think about that generation gap? You know, you're a little bit older than myself. So how do you personally approach this idea of masculinity and looking for knowledge?
Yeah, well, for me, I'm a literature professor, right? So I look for it in books, right? So I probably would defer to that. And I think like Marty, my father too was very invested in sort of passing on these masculine traditions to me, and for the most part, they've stuck. I mean, I build things, I refinish wood items. I'm handy around the house and those kinds of things, but I'm also not anywhere close to I don't live the life of adventure that Hemingway lived, right? I don't often go to Africa and go on safari. I don't often go to the bullfights in Spain. I don't often go marlin fishing off the coast of the
Are they things you'd want to do, though?
Probably not, no.
No.
I don't think I would. I'm probably like Marty. I'm way too comfortable in my Twitter, internet-connected life. So I probably wouldn't want to do those things. I'm happy when I can go out and mow the yard and say, well, I've done my masculine duty for the day.
Well, Jill Jones, what do you think about this? Do you think, from what you see in your perspective, are young men today yearning to do those types of things? Or do you want men, as you see them in society, to be out doing those things? What is the role today?
Well, you know, when I think about Hemingway, I think of freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. So I don't know. He lived life desperately. I mean, of course, who doesn't want to go to safari in Africa? Who doesn't? All of us do on some level. But when I read his stories, I see an emptiness that he's trying to fill with this big false myth. And I guess I don't agree that he didn't compromise because he married for money. And then wrote stories about manly men who married for money so they could live a lifestyle they wanted. So I don't like to burst the Hemingway bubble too much, but I think that men are benefiting today from not having to live up to just being their job. I think Paul, for example, has a young daughter and probably has much more of a hand in raising her. You know, in most of Hemingway's works, his children don't even appear. It's like there are...
He fed alcohol to his children when they were like 10. And
yeah.
He told his little boy one time, don't worry, son, you'll feel fine in a couple hours. It's just a hangover.
Yes.
So a different view of parenting, a different view of the way to live your life as a man. Well, Marty, just briefly, you know, what do you think is going to be the next development in this trend of uber-masculinism? Is it going to last for a long time, or are we going to eventually see the pendulum swing back the other way?
Yeah, I guess it swings back and forth. You know, I'm the cook in my household with my fiance. I'm the one who does most of the cooking. She does some baking. But a lot of my friends, actually, it's kind of the same way in relationships. The guys kind of tend to be the cooks now, and I actually enjoy it. I'm fine with it. I think that the most masculine thing, and this coming from a guy who wrote a whole book about how to be a man based on Hemingway, but I think the most masculine thing is just not to care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to care about how masculine you are, because the more you do that, the more you're going to worry, and worrying isn't masculine.
That's going to have to be the last word from author Marty Beckerman. He wrote The Hemingway, A Guide to Being a Man, like author Ernest Hemingway. Marty, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
We're also joined by Rollins College Assistant Professor Paul Reich, who's teaching a class this fall on Hemingway. Paul, great to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Mark.
And Rollins College Associate Professor Jill Jones teaches a class on coming of age in literature and culture. Jill, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
The discussion about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. You can visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Tell us about your favorite Hemingway book on Facebook or Twitter, or email at intersection@WMFE.org. Support for the program comes from our listeners and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Amy Green is the assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.